Again, good morning, and I want to, I should have done that before, but thanks to Harriet yesterday for stepping in and chairing the day, and
you're very welcome.
Appreciate that very, very much.
You're welcome.
I told her I probably won't be able to make as copious notes as I did yesterday sitting on her right, so, but anyway, but good morning, Dr. Belzer. Welcome. Glad that you're here with us. In just a few minutes, we'll have you give your opening statement, and then we'll open it up for questions from all of us. So, and when we're about 5 minutes left in the 45 minutes, we'll be stopping and asking you for any closing comments yourself. So, again, thanks for being here, and please begin. And do you have any questions before we start?
I do not.
Very good. Floor is yours.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much. My name is Michael Belzer, as you know, and I want to take this opportunity to say how pleased I am to have this invitation to meet with you this morning. And I also want to thank you for all the hard work you do as a volunteer committee for the RCAC to help assure that the University of Minnesota has a competency-based Board of Regents. Let me introduce myself briefly, a little bit about my family, and then articulate what experiences I have that might bring value to the Board of Regents. I was told not to be modest or shy in listing my attributes, which shouldn't be as a problem since physicians my age never really learned that in medical school. I was born and raised in South Minneapolis, attended Washburn High School in the mid-60s, was a 1969 graduate of the Liberal Arts College at the University of Minnesota, and followed that with medical school and graduated from the university in 1974. After training in internal medicine in North Carolina and hematology oncology at UCLA, I moved back to Hennepin County Medical Center in 1980 as a staff physician and have stayed there my entire professional career. This will be my 36th year and last year at Hennepin, and to tell you the truth, I'm somewhere between grieving and regretting my decision to announce my retirement, since it's a job I really love and adore. My wife, Ellen Wolfenson, is a realtor. Approximately 17 years ago, when we were both single parents, each with four kids, we decided to undertake the experiment to blend a family of eight teenagers from two different family systems, and I'm pleased to say we both survived, and the kids survived. We're still married, but I did learn a great deal from that experience, and actually I'm considering writing a manual on step-parenting. I'm presently the chief medical officer at Hennepin County Medical Center, a 450-bed safety net hospital in downtown Minneapolis. I won't go into the position description in any detail unless you want to talk about it during your question period, but you should know, because you asked, I am involved with strategic planning in a major way, quality and safety, developing goals and metrics for our organization, our CEO, and our other senior leaders, as well as working with our CFO on our budget. I think you know that safety net hospitals provide very, very different, unique and uniquely different leadership challenges than other hospitals. For example, the Mayo Clinic, which is a wonderful facility. Besides fighting for funding for indigent care almost every day, we have those moments of panic, like the I-35 bridge collapse when I got to be in the command center at the time that rolled out, and such mundane tasks as spending most of my summer preparing for Ebola and preparing our Ebola preparation plan. In terms of non-work board of directors, I listed many of them on my application. I was the board chair in the leadership hue of the Hennepin or Twin City Medical Society that represented 4,500 physicians. I've been on the board of directors for the Minnesota Visiting Nurse Agency for 9 years until I termed off. I was the board chair of the Hospice of the Twin Cities. I've been nationally on national committees, the executive committee of the National Association of Public Hospitals, the board chair for the National Public Health and Hospital Institute, and I'm presently the governance and nominating chair of our new foundation at Hennepin County Medical Center, a seven-year-old foundation. So let me outline some of the reasons why I think I would bring value to the Board of Regents if I was lucky enough to be selected. First, I have a deep affection for the University of Minnesota over my entire lifetime. My father was a graduate of the undergrad liberal arts at University. He went on to medical school at the University of Minnesota, and I followed in his footsteps. I've been a lifetime member of the Minnesota Alumni Association. And as I'm getting ready to retire and step down from an important position I care a lot about, looking for a stimulating public service opportunity with wise people and intelligent people seemed to be an ideal next step for me, fortunate enough to be selected. I've been a senior leader and executive leader in a very diverse and complex organization called Hennepin County Medical Center. We're a $900 million, 6,000 FTE organization, and you could well imagine the complexities of being a leader of a safety net hospital during the most massive change and turmoil in healthcare, healthcare funding, healthcare policy, and healthcare system, although many in this country would argue that we don't have a healthcare system. But being a leader during all this turmoil and helping navigate Hennepin County through rather complicated waters, I think, would help bring an experience to the board Regents have selected. I do understand very well the difference between governance and management at Hennepin County Medical Center. I do not report to the CEO as a chief medical officer. I report directly to the board. I've always reported directly to the board. And for the first 17 years, interestingly enough, the board of the hospital was the seven elected Hennepin County commissioners. So they were my bosses for 17 years, which was both a hoot and a challenge. I enjoyed it greatly because the Hennepin County Board is a very good board. Compared to my colleagues in Chicago and Los Angeles, we were viewed as a best practices in governance. But in 2007, for a lot of reasons, if you want to go into it later, we went and sought legislative relief from the state legislature to set up a separate board. 501c3 public benefit corporation subsidiary and a new 16-member board was put into place, which was very different in its structure, very different in its function, very different in its setup with only two county commissioners. And so I learned a lot from this process as we went through that work. I understand leadership, culture, and values. I've been responsible for naming department chiefs at Hennepin County Medical Center. I've named 27 of them, and believe me, after going through the work that you're doing, which is recruitment and selection, I learned a lot about what to do and what not to do, so I salute you for the hard work that you do. I'm the lead physician who is leading the effort for the elimination of health care disparities and health disparities at the medical center. I've also been, because of that work, appointed to the American Hospital Association Equity of Care Committee, which is a national committee that has a national call to action agenda. My application outlined a few areas with our integration of our 350 physician medical staff with the hospital. Physicians are now employed by the hospital. That was certainly a learning as well in terms of a process that really had no pathway or no clear formula on how to do it, and I think that would be helpful if I was lucky enough to be selected. I understand state government. I've been involved with legislative advocacy on this campus for 15 or 20 years. I also am the vice chair of the MERC committee, which is a state-mandated committee, medical education research committee, that distributes $53 million teaching institutions where all sorts of health professionals actually do their training. And in my many education roles at Hennepin County Medical Center, including being an associate dean at the medical school and having a responsibility for 100 medical students, 150 faculty, 300 residents, I have a good understanding of the academic health center. I've worked with 8 deans. I understand the leadership. I know their leadership team. And I think that might be somewhat valuable to the Board of Regents and the Special Committee for Academic Medicine.
Thank you very much. Start with Harriet. First question.
Sure. Wow, that's a lot of information. I'm trying to to dig in. I have about 84,000 questions after that. You have both depth and breadth of experience. If you were to look back 6 years from now, if you were selected to be a regent, how would you consider yourself to have been successful? And name one or two top-of-mind topics that you're thinking about in terms of where you might make a difference.
Well, 5 or 6 years ago, I still would have been very familiar with the Academic Health Center as well as the whole Health Science Center. I think I might have been pushing in a direction to look at something that we were accomplishing at Hennepin County Medical Center, which is to integrate the entities. It's a lot more complicated at the university than it was at Hennepin. We had a geographically based physician practice plan committed to the hospital, and although they didn't want to be hospital employees or county employees, we were able to do it. The university has university medical physicians, they have the medical school, and they have a private hospital. But that would be something I would look at, because the future of healthcare is moving in the direction of having integrated healthcare systems rather than a virtual integration that's happening now. The other thing I would have pressed for, although I don't know the functioning of the Board of Regents, is to make sure that the oversight of the campus is benchmark, metric, and data-driven. In that, with tools of analytics that we have, and with sources of data that we have, being able to hold individuals accountable rather than nuance or hunch, I would want to make sure that our leaders have solid goals that they do each year, and that they would be able to meet them.
Sure. So if you were selected to be a regent and 6 years is up and your term is up, what would you need to have accomplished to have made your mark or to feel successful? That you'd been successful?
Well, I would like individuals to say that the Board of Regents at the time that I was involved with the Board of Regents was forward-thinking, was anticipatory, and not just reactive. I would like to think that in my term on the Board of Regents that they would say we were benchmark, metric-driven, and were holding our leadership accountable. I would like to feel that the public, as well as the other regents, viewed ourselves as being very conversant in analytics and making available use of data sources that we have that are being used everywhere to be able to fully understand whether we're carrying out our mission. And I would like individuals to say, at the time I was on the Board of Regents, that we demonstrated great administrative courage. We challenged administrative leadership, raised the bar, and with each other we demonstrated courage in challenging
things. Thank you very much. Jerry.
Yeah, I appreciate your knowledge on the medical field, as I have done some of the same observations of all the changes in our world. You know, the university, at least there's lots of kind of opinion out there that the we've talked about the medical school particularly that it is not at the same status as it was when you were a student or when I was a student. And tell me what you think needs to be done so that it actually is back to the status, or what does it need to do to change its standing in the world of medicine?
So there's a number of thank you, great question. There are a number of ways that society ranks medical schools. Probably the most common is NIH funding, research grants. Then there are a number of physicians that go to primary care, tuition, and so on and so forth. So it really depends a lot on what you view as the ranking metric that's important to you. When President Kaler came to the university, he empowered a body of outside consultants to come take a look at the Academic Health Center, and they had a number of suggestions and recommendations. A new dean was recruited, I'm sure you're all familiar with, who happens to probably be the model of dean that the governing body would have hoped for, as well as the president, and that he's a research dean. Deans come in different varieties. There are education deans. So, for example, Deb Powell and Al Michael, the one that appointed me a dean, was an education dean, and their currency, what they viewed as important, was education. There have been plenty of research deans. You have one now, but I think that was the direction and the marching orders that that he was given. But between the external report, there's also been a medical school strategic plan that's hard to argue with. It lays out a pathway for excellence in the medical school. It has a currency, again, and a value for research. And I know the dean is carrying that out. I would personally, although I don't have an agenda, I would, because of my Filter at Hennepin County Medical Center being one of the four affiliate teaching hospitals that has responsibility for medical students, and I did a lot of work with medical school teaching when I was a younger faculty member. Want to look out for basic education for the medical students. I want to make sure that they have good clinical experiences, that they have the right training, because setting up a medical school is a lot different than setting up a law school or a business school. Not that those are easy to implement, but when you set up a medical school, you have to have hundreds of clinical training sites. And you know how physicians are compensated now, by productivity, by RVUs, and then asking physicians to take on medical students or medical residents can be viewed by them as merely a productivity problem for them. And so that's why university medical schools typically have major affiliated teaching hospitals. We have four of them. Hennepin County Medical Center, which is probably the largest, Regents Hospital, the VA Hospital, and Fairview. And so students have required clerkships, and the first 2 years are classroom, last 2 years are clerkships. And somebody needs to look out for the basic education of the medical students to make sure that they are competent to do what we expect them to do. And there's been a major push, I think, as you know, for training medical students in quality and safety, and for a whole lot of reasons we can go into if you're interested. But that would be something I would be attuned to if I was a leader, to make sure that the research agenda that is so important to raise the stature of the university doesn't overtake the basic teaching agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you. Lois.
Dr. Belzer. You are imbued with urban and medical health experience. The University of Minnesota is viewed as an economic driver for the state's economy. What is your current knowledge base and of Greater Minnesota? How would you envision enhancing that, and as a region, positioning it relationship-wise with the University of Minnesota to benefit fully from the University of Minnesota economic driver capacity?
Well, that's an excellent question, because you are correct. I'm a South Minneapolis kid that ended up coming back to downtown Minneapolis and have been in service to an urban population. I had an experience with the Twin City Medical Society that took me outside of the community, mainly because I felt too segregated and isolated at Hennepin County Medical Center. It didn't take me to Greater Minnesota to any degree, but I did a lot of work with the Minnesota Medical Association and with my colleague, Dr. Jacobs, who's a president of the Minnesota Medical Association. I did do a lot of visits in the near greater area. There's no question the University of Minnesota is a university for the entire state. I'm well aware that we have campuses in Crookston, Duluth, Morris, Twin Cities, and Rochester. I know that we have 16 regional extension centers and 21 research and outreach centers, and the AHEX, the Academic Health Center, has its outreach as well. To me, it would be very, very important that we continue that effort to make sure that the university isn't only viewed as a Twin City campus, and that the university reaches out to Greater Minnesota. The economic value is pretty clear. University of Minnesota graduates have started millions of dollars of new businesses, have employed hundreds of thousands of individuals, have brought billions of dollars to the economy. All of these things are very, very important and clearly one of the missions of the University of Minnesota. So it wouldn't be lost on me, even though my basic home is here, that we are a state university for the state, and that work in Greater Minnesota would be important. And personally, I am the type of individual who likes visiting campuses and visiting our regional extension offices and getting to know people. It's kind of, can tell my personality is not shy in retiring, and it's something that I would value doing, appreciate doing, and like doing.
Thank you very much.
Margaret.
Yes. I think it was interesting that you shared you report to a 16-member board as the chief medical officer, medical director, rather than the CEO. Therein should have been some problems through the years that you were in the middle, where there might not have been alignment on a big issue. Can you share any of those circumstances with us that required personal courage or professional courage on your part?
There's one now I probably shouldn't go into. It has to do with
but I will.
Yeah, it has to do with whether. Well, so I don't know how many of you are aware of the episodes that happened on our campus this summer. It wasn't part of our marketing and business development plan to have some individual step out of his automobile and fire 21 shots from an assault rifle into our emergency department waiting room, but it happened. And we also had several events where gang members were seeking other hospitalized gang members, which brought a great big, once again, security concern about our campus. Okay. Especially from our emergency physicians or nurses, they were terrified. And the issue that I could say that I may not be in alignment with our board is, should we or shouldn't we have metal detectors? Okay. When you have metal detectors, you also have a need for armed presence. Okay. Because you can't find a gun and just say, hand it over to you. So, or would we have security dogs? Okay. So dogs can be trained to be patient advocates like therapy dogs, but serve a function of an imprimatur of this is a safe area. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that maybe members of the board disagreed with me on that issue, since I'm not the board chair and I'm not the board member. That was a decision that was not mine to make. I guess the other one would be, when we made several attempts to integrate our physicians with our hospital, things didn't go well for a lot of reasons. I don't know how conversant you are with funding. I'm sure Jerry is, but the funding or the reimbursement for a hospital is totally at odds with the reimbursement for physicians. Hospitals are basically paid on a per-patient admission based on what's called a DRG or a diagnosis. For a hospital, the best patient is somebody that comes in for one day, gets very minimal treatment, and is discharged because you're paid for, pick one, pneumococcal pneumonia, $10,800. And we get some spiffs because we're a teaching hospital, and we have a disproportionate share of work. Well, physicians have pro fees. That's hospital fees. Physicians have pro fees. Their billing would be best served by 20 days in the hospital, high-tech, multiple visits, procedures, and so the alignment of finances are totally at cross purposes between physicians and the hospital. And so we thought for that, as well as strategic alignment, we needed to integrate with our physicians to make the new affordable care health care mandate, which is going to happen. And because of that, I was on a different side of the, because of my strong feeling that integration was more important than the negotiated particulars of the work. And so I was pushing for integration when our board didn't want to settle for certain demands on the part of what they viewed as arrogant physician work. And so what we did, and what I learned from it was, we ended up deciding what issues were deal breakers, took them off the table, worked in small committees with each of the deal breakers with committee reports so we wouldn't get into the enmity of discussion that would go on if we tried to hammer it out with a person a meeting. And then, well, to make a long story short, went about negotiating the deal, signing the agreement on compensation, how many board seats should the physicians have when the system, when they were employed by the system, was of course an issue. And ended up pulling off the integration, and then it became what we would call an adaptive leadership problem. Adaptive leadership is when there's no right path. There's no 1-800 number you can call up and say, how do we integrate a bunch of docs that don't want to work for a hospital and don't want to be county employees and make them happy and do the work? So, yes, I've had plenty of opportunity. And you know, there's very few times in my life when I say, God, I'm really glad I'm 65 years old. But when you get into those issues and you know you're on the right side of an issue, it's a lot easier when I'm a 65-year-old chief medical officer than when I was a kid at 40. I don't know if that answered your question.
Oh, that was a great answer.
Good. Thank you. Sonia.
Good morning. I want to take a different path. You've had a distinguished career in healthcare. And I want you to think of some experiences and lessons learned outside the realm of healthcare that would enhance your value as a regent.
Well, let me take a shot at this. And let me talk about blending a family of teenagers.
Okay.
So when Ellen and I were dating, our kids were in love with the fact that we were in love. And they were just tickled pink that, you know, because, quite frankly, how attractive of a mate is a 50-year-old male with four kids or a measured age, but, you know, as a single mom with four kids. And so we were actually fixed up by a clergy. And then we got married. Okay, now, those of you that have teenagers can imagine what happened. I was arrogant enough to think that, well, this is going to be easy because her kids like me and my kids like her and we're in love with each other. And it's just a matter of, well, of course, that didn't happen. And so what happened was if I was good enough for mom, why did she have to marry this guy? And my wife's previous husband was an All-American football player and a Super Bowl, great guy. I work with him very well. But kids going, why would mom want to marry this skinny little wimp? And so my kids were upset by the fact that her kids were all Leave It to Beaver kids because we had two very different parenting systems. I was parented out of consequences, so I parented for consequences. Clean your room or you don't go out. Don't do this or you can't do this. Ellen parented out of unconditional love, and so we just had, for example, in my family... When the mother would serve dinner, everybody would wait until she sat down and ate. Before they got up and left, they'd all do the dishes. Nobody would leave a mess in the house, and her kids weren't parented that way. So I would come home, and there'd be a swimming party and pizza all over the place. And I go, God, this is the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen until I realized, I'm going to get to your point here, I realized that parenting systems are so powerful that my parenting system wasn't the only one, it wasn't the right one. And what I needed to understand is this wasn't the kids' fault, this was me, okay? Because they were doing exactly what they were trained to do. And so what I learned was, A, to be steady, B, be focused, 3, be yourself, because I happen to believe I'm a decent guy and my wife was a decent guy and there was no reason to try to change my personality to please this kid or change my personality to please that kid. I learned a lot about filters. So I would say, Ellen, please ask Lauren not to drop her clothes on the kitchen floor, okay? Which to me was a straightforward statement. My wife would hear, Mick says my kid's bad, okay? And so having a very healthy respect for somebody's perspective, point of view, prism that they see the world from was very, very, very insightful and helpful to me.
Okay, thank you.
I think we all learned a lot from that.
So here's what I learned. If I needed to do over again, I believe we both would wait till the kids graduated. Because as interesting as it sounds as a story, it was really complicated.
You've taken
German.
Transformational change.
If I may follow up to that. I'd really like to know what you were supposed to say about the clothes on the floor. That's the piece that I'd really like to know.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Jim, that wasn't the worst of it. Their way of getting their clothes done was putting them in the bedroom.
Good.
So I had four kids putting their clothes in my bedroom. You know, and that was a little hard.
So... Just to add to that, have you ever considered making this a TV show?
It was too traumatic, but yeah, maybe. I think I'll just write my book.
There you go. Good. Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Belzer, the board, the university has very strict rules on conflict of interest, number one, and then a very strict rule that you cannot have any financial entanglements. And I notice here, and you say that if elected and determined to be, and this was determined to be a potential conflict, I think it clearly is, I could easily pass the responsibility, title, and salary to our chief academic officer. Elaborate, unpack that. Is that a clean, clear, definitive break, which is absolutely recommended, or required by the university. We had a recent issue with a, as you may well know, and please tell us about that. And then what other, and that clearly I think you'd have to do, totally resign and under their rules. But then there are other conflicts. What about your continuing role at HCMC might be problematic with respect to the university and those conflict rules, since the medical school and the HMC have a continuing relationship?
Okay, great question. So let me just define what the position is and then say if I needed to write my application over, I would have clearer than I was. So the University of Minnesota has four major teaching hospitals. It's an accreditation requirement that they have a senior leader at each hospital look after the medical students, the residents, as well as the faculty. There are faculty appointments that I have to negotiate and facilitate, as all of our faculty and academic students have academic appointments. And those of you that live in the academic world know that's pretty complicated. So I was appointed as an associate dean by Dr. L. Michael in 2000, and there is a salary that goes with it, $10,000 a year. It hasn't changed since then. And basically, depending on the currency, the dean, or their interest in education, I variably spend more or less time at the university. Typically, very little time doing much with their leadership team or with their strategy team. So I had nothing to do with, embarrassingly, I had nothing to do with the strategic plan of the university or any of that. And what I should have said is, as I'm winding down my job, I now have two individuals that will replace the business end of what my associate did. We're starting the search for my position in another 2 months, which will have a little different kind of medical staff, the Vice President of Medical Affairs. And what I should have said is, I will step down. It is the salary's a conflict. That's a given if I was working. This next year, I will still be working at Hennepin, although I will be winding down. One of the things that we learned in the late 2000s, as well as the time that Governor Kennedy eliminated general assistance medical care, which was a $50 million issue for us that just disappeared overnight, was that we really have a lot of friends in the hospital world in this city. So it turns out that every hospital's worst nightmare is Hennepin County Medical Center and out of business.
Yeah.
Because, and I want to be respectful here, that means that our patients end up in their institution. We specialize in complicated patients with all sorts of not only the ethnicity issue, but mental health, homelessness, psychiatric illness, a lot of disrupting factors. So we found that the community really rallied to our side during these funding threats. And to make a long story short, nobody views Hennepin Medical Center as their competition. Since I kind of jokingly said it, a representative company thought it was kind of cool to say it all the time. We captured the market on the entry. It's not a really good business plan, but it's the work that we do, and it's what we want to do, and other hospitals don't want to do that, along with an unfunded poison center. You'll hear more and more. We need funding for hyperbaric oxygen, psychiatric, all these things. So I've never viewed the university hospital enterprise or medical school as anything but a friend. I've had basically nothing to do with them. We don't compete with them. So I would have no problem the next year as I'm winding down to see if any conflict or not.
Very good. And Pat, probably the last question before we...
Yeah, thank you. And I'll try to be brief. But first of all, thank you for being one of those smart people that's willing to come forward. And more importantly, brighten our day a little bit. Thank you very much. Yes. I appreciate your style very much. But could you share with us a little bit about, I'm hearing in this interview, you're very much a people person. You obviously have a wonderful medical career. Could you share with us a little bit about your financial management skills and budgets that you were involved with, or either as putting together budgets, your financial acumen, if you would, please?
So you're talking about professional. Not the home checkbook
I'm saying probably a little more in scope than the home checkbook. Okay. Yes.
So,
although I don't want to assume.
Yeah. So we do have a chief financial officer, and the work of budgeting, which is interesting in hospitals. You have to so every year we start out with a 2 or 3% difference because of the difference between medical inflation and reimbursement. So we're always behind the curve, and we're always fighting uphill because we've captured the market. I'm part of the senior team that works with the overall budget every year, and I've done that for 30 years. I have my own budget that has to do with a little different this year than past year, all of the physician compensation, the benefits, the offices that they have in terms of the workers that work with them, the advanced practice providers, who are playing a more and more important role in delivery of healthcare, advanced practice providers, physician assistants, nurse practitioners. They are part of our world. Somebody has to look after their compensation. I set up a professional home for them and worked in that area with them. We sit down every year, and no doubt we have budget exercises where we ratchet down our budget every year trying to find out economies and savings. And so I'm actually very involved in that work, not on the prediction side, not on the analytics side, but more so on the medical staff side, compensation, advanced practice providing, and making sure we meet our budget because there would be nothing more damaging to the reputation of the integrated health care system than the physicians in managing their budget and their compensation. But we have a board committee and board members that work through the board for compensation, so that's the work that I need to do.
Follow-up question.
Yes.
What is the size of that operating budget for the medical staff on an annual basis?
Close to $100 million. Out of our $900 million budget.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now if you'd like to make a closing statement, appreciate it.
I don't have any formal closing statement because I know that I've mentioned a lot of things. I just want you to know that as I back away from my work at Hennepin County Medical Center, I've always been deeply involved with public service. I like being around intelligent people. University is extremely important to me. I've always, always wanted to be a regent, but I've never had an opportunity because the professional demands on my time were so intense, and then with the very untimely death of Peter Carlson coinciding with my winding down, it is a perfect opportunity for me, and I just need to take a break.
Regent Marks.
Regent Marks.
So what's the last chapter of your book?
Respect. I don't want to say don't do it. Respect your spouse.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Very enlightening. Thank you.
Well, thank you.